We're diving deep today into a document called Investing in the Ultimate Trust Fund. And this source material takes one of the most, one of the most familiar and often quoted pieces of guidance, Proverbs 3.56, and it asks us to treat it well, not as just a nice sentiment.
No, not at all. It's more like a blueprint for a life-altering financial strategy, if you will.
Exactly.
And it really is the ultimate guidance passage. Yeah. The sources challenge us to move beyond just how familiar it is. The passage, of course, is,
trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding.
In all your ways, acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths.
Right. And while most people who follow this path know those words by heart, the author asks a pretty fundamental and frankly, a bit of a confronting question,
which is,
do we actually live this out? I mean, what does the practice of complete wholehearted trust really demand from us, especially when life gets messy?
Well, and that's our mission today, isn't it? To go far beyond just reciting the words. We're going to try and extract the surprising philosophical and practical parts that this piece outlines.
Right.
We're focusing on how it redefines control, how it demands this radical humility, and ultimately how it shapes our character. So if you've ever felt like you know the truth of this passage, but you struggle to actually implement it,
which is probably most of us,
I'd say so, this deep dive promises some pretty profound aha moments about where that surrender actually happens.
Okay, so let's start with that first crucial phrase, trust in the Lord with all your heart. What exactly is this revolutionary definition of trust that the source material is built on?
The source material is very clear on this. It argues that trust is not an emotion. It's not a feeling that we just wait for.
Oh, that's interesting. So feelings are kind of irrelevant.
Often irrelevant, yes. Or sometimes even misleading. The text explicitly says that trusting the Lord is a decision of the will. It's a choice you make.
A choice.
And critically, this choice is entirely independent of your current circumstances, your mood, or, you know, how easy or difficult your life feels in that exact moment.
That distinction, trust as a decision versus trust as a feeling, that's huge. It completely flips our human impulse on its head.
It does.
Because if I feel panicked, the decision to trust can almost feel like a form of denial, doesn't it? How does the source differentiate between choosing trust and just, ignoring genuine feelings of doubt or panic?
That is precisely the intellectual friction the text gets into. It's not about ignoring the panic. It's about overriding it with a greater established reality.
An override. I like that.
Doubt and panic are just emotional responses to circumstance. The decision of the will is an active moment-by-moment choice to align your focus with the sovereignty you intellectually acknowledge.
So you're acting as if it's true, even when you don't feel it.
Exactly. It's choosing to act as if the promise is true, even when every fiber of your being is screaming the opposite.
And the author provides some incredibly grounding context here. I mean, they talk about facing a solid decade of profound personal trials, untimely deaths, severe health crises, job loss. They didn't really have the luxury of feeling comfortable before deciding to trust.
And they lay out that whole litany of woes specifically to establish credibility.
Yeah.
This is where trust became a necessary weapon in waging war against these challenges.
A weapon, yeah.
The key takeaway here is surrender. The decision to trust doesn't act as some kind of shield against heartache or loss. It just changes how you navigate the storm, not whether the storm arrives.
It's the difference between feeling faith and choosing it.
Exactly. One is conditional, the other is absolute.
That focus on absolute choice brings us perfectly to the next challenge in the proverb. Lean not on your own understanding. The source argues that if trust is a decision of the will, then leaning away from your own understanding requires a radical relinquishing of control in every single facet of your existence.
Total surrender is the term they use. And this isn't just about, you know, your finances or career path.
No, it's everything.
It covers everything. Your emotional reactions, your personal sense of purpose, all your carefully cultivated hopes, and even your dreams. It's the complete abandonment of your personal agenda in favor of the divine one.
And that, frankly, is terrifying for anyone in the modern world who's used to micromanaging every variable.
It is, which is why the source material poses such a provocative, almost confrontational question to the reader to challenge those assumptions.
It asks directly, do you trust strangers more than you trust God?
And the text suggests that, you know, based purely on observable human behavior, for many of us, the decision to trust God feels riskier than trusting the fallible people all around us.
It's true. We operate daily on this assumed faith in humanity, but we hesitate to apply that same scale of belief to the ultimate sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
And the most surprising and really specific analogy they use to illustrate this is just driving.
Yeah, basic daily mobility. It's brilliant.
It really is.
What stands out in the source is how we exercise what they call immense faith every single time we merge onto a highway.
Right.
In that moment, you are instantly trusting hundreds of complete strangers, your fellow drivers, to do the right thing.
To stay in their lane, not be on their phone.
To follow the rules of the road. You put your life in their highly unpredictable human hands without a moment's hesitation.
And if that wasn't stark enough,
yeah,
the source injects a truly powerful detail about the daily testing of that faith.
Oh, yeah.
They highlight that in Texas, there hasn't been a single fatality-free day on the road since November 7, 2000.
Decades of daily loss. That is a staggering reality check, especially when you connect it back to this idea of control.
The implication is just profound.
It is. You can be the most disciplined, attentive driver in the world, doing everything perfectly, and yet so many factors are entirely beyond your control.
A drunk driver, a distracted teen, an animal, sudden black ice.
Right. And if we can place such significant, unquestioning faith in fallible, unpredictable, sometimes dangerous strangers, how much more should we choose to trust the one being the source defines as completely sovereign and wholly good?
That driving analogy beautifully connects the idea of surrendering control to the necessity of acknowledgement, which brings us to the next part of the proverb.
In all your ways, acknowledge him.
Exactly. And the document states this action is fundamentally an exercise in deep humility.
That's right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, acknowledging him in this context is simply recognizing the obvious and unchangeable reality that God is sovereign.
So it's not some complex spiritual maneuver?
Not at all. It is a declaration of reality. It's just saying, I see what is true regardless of what I feel or what I wish.
But let's challenge that for a moment. Recognizing sovereignty is easy when you get a promotion.
Of course.
It's immensely difficult when you are that author recounting the loss of a loved one or facing joblessness. How does the source material suggest we genuinely acknowledge sovereignty in the middle of profound, painful hardship?
The source really pivots on the futility of our limited perspective. Acknowledging him means accepting that nothing, large or small, is outside of his holy purview.
The contrast is the key.
The contrast is everything. Our limited human understanding, bound by time and emotion, it simply cannot compare to the infinite, comprehensive knowledge of the sovereign. Humility is recognizing that even our best laid plans are based on insufficient data.
So surrendering your own understanding isn't just about accepting the concept of sovereignty. It's realizing that relying solely on your own limited human perspective is actually a form of self-sabotage.
Yes. You're actively choosing a less reliable source of truth to navigate the complexity of the world.
It's like choosing a broken compass.
Precisely. If we are struggling to understand why something is happening, the source suggests we are asking the wrong question. Acknowledging sovereignty means trusting the reality of his authority, even if the why remains completely obscured from our limited view.
Okay. So if we've made the deliberate decision to trust and we've humbly surrendered our limited understanding, what's the promised result? The final phrase, he shall direct your paths.
Mm.
The text clarifies this direction isn't always a GPS pinpoint.
Mm.
It means trusting him as we traverse the often long and winding roads of our lives.
And anyone on a long road knows that detours are inevitable. This section of the source makes a crucial distinction that gets right to the core of our motivation.
Which is?
It argues that we must learn to trust in him, not in what he can do for us. If your trust is based on the results you get, it's just a transactional relationship. But if your trust is based on his nature, his character, well, that's relational.
That is a major shift. Because if your focus is purely transactional, I trust you, so you must give me comfort, then any detour or setback feels like a betrayal.
Right. It breaks the deal.
So what's the alternative focus the source offers?
The source asserts that he is far more interested in developing our character than in maintaining our immediate comfort.
Character, not comfort.
Exactly. If comfort were the goal, the path would be smooth and short. But because character, things like patience, perseverance, reliance is the goal, then the detours, the winding roads, the difficult terrain, they're not deviations from the path.
They are the path.
They are the path. They are the curriculum.
So the hardship isn't a sign that the direction has failed. It's a sign that character development is actively in progress.
That's it. This means staying the course, choosing trust again and again, even when the scenery is definitely not scenic. It fundamentally changes how you process hardship. Instead of viewing suffering as evidence of abandonment, The text encourages us to see it as evidence that the investment in character is being stress tested. The path is the destination, because the path shapes the person who arrives.
Okay, let's bring this down to a practical application for the listener.
Yeah.
If we accept the premise that trust is a decision of the will, how do we actually operationalize this decision every day?
Yeah.
What's the practical step the source provides for investing in this ultimate trust fund?
The most immediate, concrete, practical step is to begin each day with an intentional, conscious decision of the will. And that is to ask for his guidance first.
Before anything else,
make that investment the absolute priority of your day.
And the source offers a very specific, very relevant behavioral contrast here to highlight what that choice looks like in, well, in today's world. Mm. It challenges you, the listener, to start the day with words of praise and thanksgiving, which is an immediate, active acknowledgement of sovereignty, as opposed to the immediate reflexive reaction of scrolling through Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
That contrast is so powerful because it perfectly illustrates the direction of your focus. When you wake up and immediately tune into social media, you are tuning into the world's agenda.
Its anxieties, its demands.
Its need for validation. You instantly relinquish control to all that external noise. But when you choose praise first, you are immediately reinforcing your decision of the will to trust.
In essence, choosing the scroll is choosing to lean on a very fragile, chaotic understanding.
Yes.
Whereas choosing praise is an intentional daily investment in the ultimate trust fund.
That's the summary right there. The approach has to be wholly and completely focused on him. It's not about us or our immediate concerns. The source even suggests our conversation should follow his leanings and his agenda, not our own self-centered requests.
The goal is just to choose surrender.
Wholly and completely, securing that investment every single day.
That was a tremendous deep dive into a text we thought we knew so well. Let's just quickly review the key takeaways for you, the listener, before we wrap up.
Okay.
First, remember that fundamental definition. Trust is a decision of the will. It's a choice you make, not a feeling you have to wait for.
Second, the source gives us that daily test of our capacity for faith through the driving analogy. If you can trust hundreds of fallible strangers with your life on the highway, you have already proven you possess the capacity for the immense faith required to trust the sovereign.
And finally, the ultimate goal of surrendering control and understanding is not instant comfort or convenience, but the deep foundational development of your character. The detours are simply part of the investment plan.
So since the text places such a strong emphasis on replacing mindless routine, like that social media scroll, with intentional acts of praise, consider this for your own path. If trust is a deliberate decision, what simple, maybe even nonverbal routine could you replace with an intentional moment of acknowledging God's sovereignty before you engage in the most demanding, highest stakes task of your entire day?
Hmm.
That's something for you to explore as you walk the path.